AM and 90.9 FM, HD3 Urbana.
Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today in WILL AM 580. We're going to be talking media politics, media policy, all the great debates over journalism, public media, the internet, privacy, media consolidation, the works. Because today we're going to have with us the head of Free Press, the National Media Reform Organization, for the full hour. It should be a terrific show. Sit back, relax, and enjoy it. But before we get to our guests, let's go to Media Minutes.
Any views or opinions expressed by the hosts of Media Minutes are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or licensee.
Welcome to Media Minutes. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
And I'm Megan Tatey.
On the surface, it sounded good. Internet service provider Comcast was to offer a new $10 a month broadband tier called Internet Essentials to low-income households. This wasn't exactly an altruistic move. When approving the company's merger with NBC Universal, the Federal Communications Commission mandated that Comcast offer low-cost internet access to help bridge the digital divide. But 6 months into the program, communities are finding that the barriers to entry are plentiful. Action United is an organization in Philadelphia that works with low and moderate income families. Late last year, the group conducted an informal survey of 100 low-income households and found that none of them had enrolled in Internet Essentials. Those residents who had heard of the program were either ineligible to participate or had difficulty accessing information about it. Ellie Porter Webb, a parent organizer with Action United, explains.
They either had prior Comcast service, or because they had a back bill with Comcast, or for a host of other reasons. You know, if the tenant in your apartment prior to you had some sort of back bill with Comcast, there'd be a block on the house. You had to go down to the office to get that off, and then it would take 72 hours. You know, so a lot of obstacles found in our communities of folks getting the service.
Action United took its findings to Comcast and presented the company with a 9-point plan to make Internet Essentials more accessible. The group proposed allowing a payment plan for back bills and engaging in one-on-one outreach in communities instead of relying on bulletin boards and flyers to publicize the program. And Action United also wanted data from Comcast on how the program is doing.
One of the big things in our proposal was saying, well, so what's the reality? What are the numbers? How many people have signed up? How many people have been deemed ineligible? This is our finding. This is all the data we have because you're not providing any.
Comcast responded this week to the group's request for information.
463 people in Philadelphia have been signed up for the program, which is a mere 0.3% of all the families that they say are eligible. And even nationwide, it's 41,000 families that they've signed up, and that's a mere 2%. And so, you know, when Comcast talks about really closing the digital divide, they're going to have to do a lot more in this limited program to really make a dent, if that's their goal.
Police in Oakland, California arrested 7 journalists at an Occupy protest last Saturday, the largest number arrested since the November raid on Zuccotti Park in New York City. This weekend's arrests bring the total number of journalists detained in Occupy protests to nearly 50. Journalists from organizations including the San Francisco Chronicle, Mother Jones, the East Bay Express, and the San Francisco Bay Guardian were swept up with nearly 400 protesters during the Move-In Day action, an attempt to take over an abandoned building for Occupy activities. Kristen Haynes is a reporter for KGO Radio in San Francisco.
It just seemed like an odd decision. I mean, they should expect us to be there when there's a big protest. They should expect us to be in the crowd. We are trying to see what's going on firsthand, and you can't cover it if you're 2 blocks away. You have to be there seeing what's going on and witnessing it, and that's why me and a couple other people, you know, were within the crowd itself.
Despite the fact that Haynes had a press pass issued from the San Francisco Police Department, she was arrested, her hands bound behind her back with zip ties. She was later released at the scene. Police apologized and escorted her out of the area. Freelance journalist and cartoonist Susie Cagle was also arrested during the protest and was released that night in Oakland. This is Cagle's second tangle with Oakland police. She was arrested in November while covering another Occupy Oakland protest. She was the only journalist arrested that day. On that occasion, she spent 15 hours in jail. Charges of presence at the scene of a riot and failure to disperse were dropped a month later. There is an internal affairs investigation pending in her case. After that experience, she got press passes from the Newspaper Guild Freelancers Guild and the Oakland Police Department. Yet, even after Cagle had obtained these credentials and identified herself as a member of the press, police pushed her around and screamed at her.
I wanted to leave, and I knew the rights that the press pass supposedly afforded me in those sorts of situations. I was very well aware of the crowd control policy toward media of the Oakland Police Department, which is that media are allowed to cross police lines and they are allowed to be present during times of mass arrests and during unlawful assembly.
Cagle, who has written and illustrated for The Atlantic and The American Prospect, believes that police respect her less because she is a freelance journalist.
The first time I was arrested, I said, I'm working for Alternate and Truth Out and Good magazine. And my arresting officer said, never heard of them. That was his reasoning. I've never heard of those places, so you're going to jail.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
Welcome back. This is Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today, February 5th, 2012, here in WILL AM 580. Our guest today may well be, if not the most knowledgeable person about media policy in the United States today. He's certainly on anyone's short list. Our guest is Craig Aaron, the president, CEO, and executive director of Free Press and the Free Press Action Fund, who's held that job now for about a year and has worked at Free Press for the last 7 or so years. Before that, full disclosure, I'm on the board of Free Press, helped found the organization, and have known Craig Aaron, dare I say it, since the 1990s. Craig Aaron, welcome to Media Matters.
Thanks for having me, Bob. Appreciate it.
Well, there's so much to talk about, not just in terms of breaking issues like the one we just heard about in Media Minutes with reporters getting arrested now at record rates in the United States, to issues of internet privacy and intellectual property copyright battles online, all sorts of stuff to talk about. But before we do, Craig Aaron, a little bit for some of our listeners who might not be familiar with the organization Free Press. What is Free Press? You know, what does it work on? What's its history in a nutshell?
Well, Free Press is the nation's largest organization devoted exclusively to issues of media, technology, and democracy. And as you know better than anybody, we were started to really bring the public into the conversation around media policy and the decisions being made for too long in Washington behind closed doors, but without the public's involvement or consent. And over the last almost decade now, we've zeroed in on issues related to media ownership and the future of journalism, and especially the future of the internet, and mobilized a large number of people to get involved in those issues, to make their voices heard in Washington, where so many of these decisions are being made, and really trying to put the public into a discussion that they've been left out of for far too long.
How many people work for Free Press? How many members do you have? How large of an organization is it?
So we currently have about 500,000 active members across the country who get our emails, who take action. Probably three or four times that many people have done something with Free Press over the years, attended an event, sent a letter to the member of Congress, et cetera. And we now have a staff of close to 40 at our two offices in Washington, D.C. and in Western Massachusetts.
Craig Aaron, our guest today in Media Matters. Craig Aaron will be speaking, by the way, in Urbana at the University of Illinois this coming Wednesday at 4 p.m. in room 213 in Gregory Hall, so you can hear Craig talk live. And we'll be talking at 6 p.m. that very same night, this coming Wednesday, at the Indy Media Center in downtown Urbana. Craig, what are the topics of your talks?
Well, I'm going to be talking about the future of the media and what you can do about it, and looking at a broad range of the issues that we're exploring here at Free Press, with a special focus on some of the creative activism that's happening around these issues, and really just hoping to urge people to get involved and pay attention to these issues and see that there really is great progress being made across these issues, you know, in the face of sometimes some long odds, some powerful opponents. But I'm going to be exploring a little bit of everything and also finding out from folks in Urbana what they're interested in, what they care about, what they're concerned about right now.
Well, let's give a taste of what you have to say for the next 50 minutes or so. And let's start with something that was talked about in Media Minutes, the five-minute program we air every week of highlights of media policy news. And one of the breaking stories Free Press has been working on is that in the last couple of weeks, the United States ranking in terms of how free our press system is went down, if I'm not mistaken, to 47th in the world. And we are now arresting enormous numbers of working journalists at demonstrations and locking them up. And I know Free Press has made this an issue, has been chronicling this. The name Free Press would suggest it's an issue of great concern. Could you talk a little bit more about what's going on? Why is this taking place and what we can do about it?
Sure. We have been paying very close attention. My colleague Josh Stearns has personally been very active in tracking and verifying this crackdown on journalists, especially around the Occupy Wall Street protests and the Occupy DC and all the other Occupy events that are happening across the country. And we have seen this really, you know, unprecedented in recent memory crackdown on journalists simply trying to do their jobs and cover what's happening at these very, very important events. And we've seen, I think, more than 50 journalists, just in the past 6 months or less than 6 months, be arrested simply trying to cover the arrest of protesters or what the protesters were doing, being swept up in these very aggressive crackdowns. And we've also seen, I think, and one reason this is so important is real efforts by authorities to disrupt the ability of people to cover what's actually happening at these events. So we've seen, you know, one of the hallmarks of the Occupy movement has been people there live streaming constantly and filming what's going on. And the police have responded with things like really aggressive flashes, just blocking people trying to film, and of course going as far as actually putting journalists in handcuffs. So it's something we're very concerned about. It's certainly tied to the larger effort to crack down. Just today, again, they're sweeping out Occupy DC in Washington, really one of the last encampments of the Occupy movement that was still standing. But we're especially concerned about the ability for people to know what's happening at these events from more than just the police spokesperson, or even more than just some of the activists themselves. The journalists have such an important role to play, and for a change around Occupy have actually been covering this movement and these protests, and that's, I think, what's made them, you know, so remarkable and why they've enjoyed really such broad popular support is because of this ability to, you know, go in and see what's actually happening there, and that is very much being targeted, and it's something we're very concerned about, and a lot of Americans seem to be concerned about. I think more than 50,000 have already signed a petition that went to the U.S. Conference of Mayors asking them to protect press freedom. I think this is only going to get more important as these protests happen, as we see, what will inevitably be large protests around the big political conventions. We've seen journalists absolutely being targeted by the authorities and making it harder for people to know what's happening.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, there's going to be the big meeting in Chicago in May of this year.
Right around the G8.
Mm-hmm. The G8 are going to meet, and all the heads of the dominant economic powers in the world. And this is going to be an area, again, where I think there will possibly be considerable public protests. What's going on there with news coverage?
Well, you know, I think that'll be a big question. I think what concerns me is it's very clear that, you know, these police forces, they're comparing notes a lot on how they've cracked down on these things. That's why you see the same types of tactics used from city to city to city. And you're going to see a big convergence of protesters potentially, and of course a lot of people hoping to cover that event from a variety of, you know, traditional news sources as well as a lot of new ones. And I think that will definitely be a flashpoint and one we need to look at, and, you know, something that some people would rather wasn't getting on the air, wasn't getting attention. And I think there's a theory that if they can make it harder for journalists to do their jobs, if that threat of arrest is hovering over them, that a lot of journalists can be kept, you know, around the corner, down the street, away from these events, and that the stories of what's actually going on won't be covered. It's interesting, though, because we are seeing so much coverage, of course, still get out, and the ability of anybody with a laptop, with a mobile phone, to chronicle what's going on has been one of the things that I think has really motivated and mobilized this movement. Certainly, initially in New York, when peaceful protesters were being pepper sprayed, you know, that was one of the first galvanizing moments of the Occupy movement. And I think, I mean, even this week in the crackdown on Occupy DC, you saw, you know, peaceful, nonviolent protesters, being tased and being dealt with very roughly. And I think, had a big influence on the public perception of what the protesters are doing and what the police are doing. And so there's no question that the media itself has become a target in these protests.
Craig Aaron, our guest from Free Press, the executive director there, the president and the CEO. He's coming to us live. If you have any questions or comments for Craig Aaron, the phone number here at Media Matters is 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Craig Aaron, his work at Free Press, you can learn about the group at freepress.net on the web, and I'm sure they're Twittered and Facebooked and everything else you could possibly want in that regard. And Craig Aaron, we'll be talking here in Champaign-Urbana Wednesday, 4 o'clock at 213 Gregory Hall, and then at 6 p.m. at the Indy Media Center in downtown Urbana. So go hear them, catch them live. Craig Aaron, we've been talking about the crackdown on working journalists, especially in demonstrations and covering the Occupy movement. And I'm wondering, are most of these journalists, like in the news report just before we came on air, are connected with independent alternative media, blogs, websites? They're not associated oftentimes with commercial media or what's called corporate media, the big established institutions. And I'm wondering if is there some solidarity here among from Fox News and MSNBC and the various commercial news media? Are they going to the wall here, locking arms with the journalists, or are they sort of on the sidelines?
Well, you know, I think it's been a little bit of a mix depending on where it happens. I mean, in Oakland, in New York, where there have been crackdowns on journalists, mainstream or corporate journalists have been caught up right alongside the independent journalists. And so in some cases, there has definitely been some solidarity, when the New York Times reporter is getting arrested next to the Indy Times reporter, and they're both, putting out the word, that can be very important. I think certainly some of the traditional journalists, television journalists and others, some of them, have relationships with the authorities, are, already familiar with the police spokesman and go to those people for their angle on the story, sometimes not including the protesters or independent voices. And so I think that has been an issue. But, by and large, I think a lot of, journalists and journalism organizations have been very concerned about this, and that includes all of the journalists. So in some ways, that solidarity among journalists, I think, is actually a really positive step. That said, there's no question that independent journalists working for, indie media and, their own outlets, their own websites that have been set up specifically to cover Occupy have provided a depth of coverage and a closeness of coverage that you're certainly not going to find anywhere in the mainstream media. If you want to do nothing but stream Occupy protests all day, and like you're actually there, there are people on the ground doing that, and that's been pretty remarkable. There also are some independent journalists. You heard Susie Cagle on the Media Minutes podcast, a journalist in New York named Allison Kilkenny. I think a number of others, a guy from the Boston Phoenix, who've just been doing some really amazing reporting, some of the best reporting out there about this, of course, is coming from the independent press.
Craig Aaron, just a final point. I alluded to earlier the new report that I think ranks the United States 47th in the world in having a free press. And I'm not sure, I don't have that in front of me, so I'm not sure I have that exactly right. You're familiar with what I'm talking about.
Yes, right? Absolutely. I think we fell from something like 27th to 47th because of the crackdown you've seen on journalists here just in the past 6 months or so.
I mean, what sort of countries, are we in bed with down there in the 40s? I mean, where are we now as a country when our press system is, is really no longer the flagship of the world?
Well, that's right. I mean, it's sort of like we are often proclaim it to be the best in the world, but by many different rankings, we have been moving in the wrong direction for quite some time. You can look at these measures of press freedom, which are not being done by, you know, groups with a political agenda. You know, this is, you know, Reporters Without Borders, who's just looking to protect journalists. United States falling on the list. You can look at when it comes to investing in non-commercial media and public media, you see us falling further and further down the list. In basic measures of democracy that are unquestionably tied to our media system, we're falling further and further down the list. So that doesn't, you know, match the sloganeering and, you know, sort of all the things we've all been taught growing up about what the U.S. system is or should be, but certainly it's great cause for alarm to see us going in the wrong direction when, you know, many countries that are now ahead of us on the list have looked to the United States, you know, whether it always lived up to it or not, as really a beacon of press freedom and independent voices, and yet here we are in 2012 going the wrong way.
Craig Aaron, our guest today, the executive director of Free Press. You can learn about Free Press at freepress.net. We're talking about the full range of media policy and media issues in the United States today: media ownership, public media, censorship on the internet, net neutrality, copyright on the internet, the works. Your questions and comments are welcome at 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Craig Aaron, media consolidation was probably the issue that put Free Press on the map with the great 2003 battles over whether the media ownership rules were going to be relaxed, that, you know, galvanized literally millions of Americans to take an interest in an issue they had never really not even known about before then. And is media consolidation still an issue, or is, like, the internet sort of blown that out of the water now that everyone can go on Facebook and have friends?
Well, I think a lot of people would like you to believe it's no longer an issue. I think I saw Rupert Murdoch tweeting over the weekend that, you know, now that Facebook exists, there's no such thing as a media monopoly. You know, so obviously, you know, careful what sources you trust there. But no question, media consolidation still matters. You know, most people still get their news and information primarily from local television. And those are outlets that have fallen into fewer and fewer hands. When it comes to any kind of local coverage, you know, who owns your media absolutely does matter. And even on the internet, the supposedly, you know, free and open internet that's out there, certainly there are a lot of things to choose from. But when it comes to who is actually controlling the organizations that do most of the reporting, most of the news coverage, hiring journalists or firing journalists, as the case may be, we are seeing things fall into fewer and fewer hands, and we have some new media monopolists or would-be media monopolists, companies like Comcast and AT&T and Verizon, who would like to get in on the game that Clear Channel and News Corp and everyone established over the years. But there's no question in my mind that media ownership very much still matters. And in fact, the FCC right now is again reviewing its media ownership rules they have failed to change and to gut because of citizen opposition, and they are, unfortunately, I think, are continuing to push for relaxation and loosening of the rules, even though we can look back at 20 or 30 years of absolute failure when it comes to media consolidation, which has been bad for democracy and it hasn't been much better for business, and yet we continue to pursue these policies which encourage our media to fall into fewer and fewer hands. So I think it's an issue of absolutely crucial concern right now, and one we're hopefully going to be hearing a lot more about, although the media, of course, never like to cover themselves, but hopefully hearing a lot more about in the months ahead, because unfortunately things continue to move in the wrong direction. We continue to see, even with so many channels, the actual production of media falling into those fewer and fewer hands across the board.
Craig Aaron, I'm having cognitive dissonance because in 2008, the Democrats won their second consecutive sweeping victory in Congress, and President Obama was elected on a campaign of being opposed to media consolidation and having sharp concerns about it. And now his party, the Democrats, run the FCC. They have a majority of the votes there. And you're telling me that they're not doing much about it. What about people like Michael Copps, who's been on this show and has been a champion of breaking up consolidated, concentrated media markets?
Well, unfortunately, Michael Copps is no longer at the FCC. His term expired in December. And, you know, he was the conscience of the FCC on this issue for so long and really made it in many ways such a popular and populist issue by his barnstorming across the country and speaking about it, but he no longer has a vote, and I have real serious concerns that those remaining on the FCC, some of them anyway, including the chairman, aren't really concerned with media ownership. And, you know, despite all of the research they've commissioned that show that, you know, local news is hard to come by and dominated by a handful of companies, despite continuing to lose in court, and we beat them over the summer in a case where they tried to loosen the rules that would allow one company to own broadcast stations and a newspaper in the same market, that they continue to take their cues from the corporate lobbyists and the National Association of Broadcasters and the big media companies and are ignoring, I would argue at their peril, the overwhelming public opposition to media consolidation, which is the reason that somebody like Barack Obama made it an issue in the campaign, is because you can look from 2003 on, 99% of the comments received by the FCC at all of the public hearings, any opportunity people have to weigh in, they say there is too much media consolidation. And yet our elected and appointed officials, unfortunately, continue to push things in the wrong direction. And, you know, it really is a shame because so many, when the Republicans were in power, so many Democrats were very quick to say, oh, media consolidation, yes, we're very concerned about it, this is an outrage. And yet when they have the opportunity to hold the line or actually improve things, so far they are failing to do it. Now, that doesn't mean I'm hopeless, and there's a difference between proposing rules and putting things out for comment and actually doing them, and I think this FCC has the opportunity to reverse course. They're certainly going to hear from us. They're certainly going to hear from the public about their attempts, any attempts to loosen media ownership, and I hope to see them both move in the other direction and also deal with some of these outstanding issues that the public keeps bringing up, that the courts keep bringing up, starting with diversity of media ownership, which should be, I think, their number one priority. The people of color, women, own a tiny percentage of the nation's television and radio stations. This is something the FCC has neglected to even do legitimate studies on over the years. They have the opportunity, this administration has the opportunity to get that right. I hope we'll begin to see signals that they intend to do that very soon. But we'll see. And if they don't, I mean, this is a real wake-up moment. I mean, it's no secret to anybody who's ever watched a presidential candidate that what they say on the campaign trail and what they do in office are different things, but unfortunately, time and again in this administration and with this Federal Communications Commission, we have seen them absolutely do an about-face on really, really key issues like media ownership, internet freedom, a series of things where they have not taken the bold stances that they set out in the last election, and it's left a lot of people very discouraged and disappointed. You know, there have been a few notable exceptions, standing up to the AT&T merger, elements of the national broadband plan, but you look at something like media ownership where 99% of the public is on one side, you have to ask yourself, what is the FCC and the Obama administration doing standing with that 1% on the other side?
Our guest, Craig Aaron, the head of Free Press, the media forum organization. You can learn about Free Press at freepress.net. Our phone lines are open at 333-9455, toll-free, open at 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to the phone lines right now to a couple of callers who have been waiting patiently. Let's start with line one, Champaign County. You're on the air with Craig Aaron.
Hi. I was going to ask about the impoundment of GlobalRevolution.tv's material, but I see they're back up. I guess they got an injunction, and they have live streaming from Occupy, the Super Bowl, the eviction day number one at Pittsburgh, and also Freedom Plaza in D.C. And they have these weird guys in white suits that are a sight to behold. But anyway, as far as the local element of Illinois, you've already mentioned the G8 NATO thing in June and draconian response in advance by the Chicago City Council and Rahm Emanuel. Mentioning that because it is really bad and it's criminalizing dissent to a large extent. But the other thing about Illinois is a particularity that ought to be held up for lampoon is it's the only state in the union that has a felony offense of videotaping police. And it's outrageous. I mean, and as it was demonstrated in Media Matters, the police get to decide who's in the media or not. I'm sure there's an exception for authentic media, corporate media, to be filming if they so choose, which they generally don't. But I wanted you to react to that, and since I won't be able to attend your talk on Wednesday, I'll be out of town. This was my one shot to raise the local people who are really seized with this videotaping the police issue, because there have been some incidents that are really shocking, and both in the suppression of the videotaping and also the leaking of police videotapes, which show how racist and absurd the Champaign police were. And I'll leave it at that. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Craig Aaron, any comments? Well,
yeah, sure. The caller raises all sorts of incredibly crucial issues. I think in terms of credentialing, we do need to be having a discussion about whether the police or the mayor's office should be deciding, you know, or, you know, elements of Congress, whoever, should be deciding who is a journalist and who isn't. I think we, you know, in this modern era, need to have a much broader definition. You know, those who are actually producing, committing journalism, if you will, need to have the protections of journalists. So I think we need to look at that. It sounds like, and I'm not familiar with the details of the Chicago law, but and I imagine that ACLU and folks like that are taking a close look at that. But that's obviously of major concern if you can't, you know, videotape what's going on. I mean, you can cite numerous examples, you know, all the way back to Rodney King, of why it's so important that people be able to do that. And I think we have seen, you know, certainly they would like to decide who's in and who's out to target outlets like Global Revolution TV that are very much doing journalism. And yes, they are close to the movement in some ways, but they're providing, you know, a view and footage that you really can't get anywhere else. It's no coincidence that they've been targeted along with others trying to pay attention to this. And I thought the notion of criminalizing dissent is absolutely one we need to be very concerned about. We've seen it. You know, go back to the things that happened before the Republican convention in 2008, you know, and these are all tactics reminiscent of some of the worst chapters of American history when it comes to cracking down on dissidents and dissent, and things that, again, we shouldn't be seeing in the United States of America in 2012. You know, these are tactics that, you know, we like to associate with some of the worst regimes in the world, and we need to be talking a lot more and making a lot more noise about when they're actually happening here in the States.
Let's go back to the phone lines to another caller who's been waiting patiently. Line 2, Urbana, you're on the air with Craig Aaron.
Yeah, I really appreciate this show and your guests. I listened to Morning Edition on this very station almost every day, and I listen again at noon, and I hear lots and lots and lots about the Republican candidates. I even heard about Michael Jackson's doctor three times within an hour. But without this show and a few like it, Media Minutes maybe, and some of the locally produced shows, I wouldn't hear anything about Occupy. So I'm glad you're saying what you're saying, and I would like to encourage the station to cover it. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Craig Aaron, any comments?
Well, no. I mean, I obviously appreciate the call, and it is incredibly important. Although, you know, I have to say, when it comes to Occupy, and maybe it has waned a little bit in more recent weeks, but I've actually been somewhat amazed at the level of coverage that continues to come out of the mainstream media. I mean, there's no question, if you are looking for the best coverage of the Occupy movement, that you should be looking at independent media. If you're looking for the kind of on-the-ground coverage that something like Global Revolution TV is providing, I would absolutely encourage people to broaden their media diet and explore all of those outlets. I think what's been interesting to me, though, is that after the initial wave of protest where there was this real attempt to ignore it, well, we don't really understand what they're standing for, and NPR was one of the worst offenders there, honestly. Initially, their ombudsman even had to go into the newsroom and ask, you know, why aren't you covering this? But as the protest started to grow, you know, they went through the mocking phase where they only interviewed people dressed up in crazy outfits. But eventually, Occupy was still there. And one of the really remarkable things about this protest is that it was able to crack through that sort of scorn of the mainstream media and suddenly found itself, you know, topping every newscast and getting a lot of coverage. So, you know, I leave things sort of encouraged because it shows that effective and creative protest can still break through even the most sort of ossified media institutions. And that, to me, is something hopeful. You know, I was talking to
Juan Gonzalez at the New York Daily News not long ago, and you know, he was saying that when he looks back at the 60s and all the era of protest, you know, he kind of can't believe how good the coverage is, because he remembers a time when, you know, things that he was doing that others were doing there was being just outwardly attacked by so much of the mainstream media, and that maybe we're actually seeing some progress, which, you know, may or may not be consolation minute to minute in what, you know, any of the mainstream media are doing, but I think overall has made for an even more interesting political moment, one in which, thanks to Occupy and really the vanguard of the Occupy movement, suddenly we're talking about issues like inequality that we weren't talking about at all, you know, despite the incredible wealth divide that's going on in this country, despite, you know, all of that. Suddenly you find, you know, the 99% versus the 1% becoming a basic talking point in almost any issue. And I think that's been one of the most remarkable achievements of Occupy in pushing those issues into the fore, you know, even as the movement goes off in whatever direction it's going to go in. It's certainly changed our national discussion in ways that I would suggest are very, very positive.
Craig Aaron, our guest today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. This is WILL AM 580. We're coming to you live today, so the phone lines are open at 333-9455 and toll-free 1-800-222-9455. Craig Aaron, the Free Press is probably as well-known as anything for its work battling for what's called net neutrality and to keep the Internet open and ubiquitous and accessible to people at reasonable prices and uncensored. And I know that this is where a lot of the work of Free Press has been for the past several years, including right to the present day. And maybe you could give an update to our listeners of the status of network neutrality and how it stands now, what it is and where it stands and where it's going.
Sure. Well, so net neutrality has really been one of our hallmark issues. And, you know, for those who don't know, net neutrality is the fundamental principle that ensures when you go online, you can go wherever you want, do whatever you want, download whatever you want, and it is not up to your internet service provider to decide which websites are going to work and which won't. And this has now been a fight that's been going on here for more than 6 years to try to secure net neutrality under the law and make sure that we have these protections. And it's been a fight that's had its ups and downs, but I think that momentum is going in a pretty good direction. The FCC did make net neutrality rules in late 2010. I don't think those rules are good enough, but they do protect you pretty well when it comes to your home connection, your wired connection, if you're lucky to have one. Where they really fall down is in protecting wireless use and you know, mobile, what you can do with your mobile phone or your mobile device. They don't offer the same kind of protection, and they would allow an AT&T or a Verizon to interfere with what you can do online, to speed up certain sites and services, favor them over others. So we're very concerned about that and continuing to fight to try to improve those rules. In fact, we're actually taking the FCC to court. We've sued because we think they've made an arbitrary distinction between your wired connection and your wireless connection. Now, that said, what really has me most encouraged is the increasing activism around these issues. You know, net neutrality was really the first in many ways of these sort of wonky internet issues to really capture the public's imagination. We saw millions of people get involved in this fight. We were able to turn back as recently as November an attack on net neutrality where the House of Representatives threatened to get rid of even the watered-down rules, to have no rules whatsoever, no ability to protect the public. We were able to stop that in the Senate. And what we've seen happen since then, I mean, truly remarkably, is all of the activism around what are called SOPA and PIPA.
Please, this is a good point for you to introduce this turn of the debate to copyright issue online and the big fight there. So, yeah, take over.
Yeah, so those were SOPA and PIPA, the acronyms for a series of, you could call that, they were presented as anti-piracy bills, but what they really were web censorship bills. And this was a massive overreach pushed by primarily by the big media companies in Hollywood to really threaten the basic architecture of the internet, the ability, you know, in the name of trying to crack down on piracy abroad, they were really threatening all of our ability to do what we want online and setting up a regime in which, you know, if your kid made a video lip syncing to a Justin Bieber song, you know, suddenly they could be, or you could be looking at, you know, massive fines and jail time and who knows what. And, you know, would have really forced a lot of websites to crack down on user-generated content and all sorts of other bad things that were in various versions of these bills. But the remarkable part of this story is that when the Internet really got hold of this information and realized how close Congress was, and there was no question that if you were counting the votes even a month ago, these were bills that were going to pass. Hollywood had spent a lot of money. They had Republicans and Democrats lined up. But suddenly, word got out on the Internet, and a lot of organizing started happening on the Internet in opposition to these bills. And then we just saw public awareness explode, and eventually culminating in this national day of anti-censorship work, where you saw sites, as many of you I'm sure did, Wikipedia shut down for the day and directed calls to Congress. Google put something on their main page directing calls to Congress, and a lot of great activist groups, Electronic Frontier Foundation, Public Knowledge, Demand Progress, as well as Free Press and others, mobilized their members to really push against this bill, and we saw it a complete reversal. Suddenly you saw every Republican presidential candidate against this bill. You saw staunch advocates for the bill switching sides, and you saw this unprecedented mobilization on the Internet. Something like 10 million people took action against these bills. Now, that's never been seen before, and I think it really has been an awakening for a lot of Internet users at just how out of touch Congress is on these Internet issues and how much needs to be done. Now, the worst thing we could do after this great victory is to assume that the lesson here is don't regulate anything. And some will try to take this victory and push it in that direction, but I really think the lesson is that if you have good policy, people will get behind it, but if you do something else, they're going to oppose it very strenuously. And if we can take that energy and channel it proactively towards smart policies that protect Internet users, that preserve the Internet as this unrivaled source of democratic participation and free speech, as well as economic innovation, that's what we need to do, and that's something that I think will appeal to the millions of people who are suddenly waking up to these threats to the Internet. So it's a moment where I'm very encouraged, even though we don't have the perfect net neutrality rules on the books, even though there's a lot of work to be done, I think that we're definitely, the winds are shifting, and we have them at our back in a way that we haven't seen maybe ever before.
Craig Aaron, how much of the victory, the recent victory over the SOPA and PIPA, stopping these sort of increases in arbitrary web censorship that would have taken place legally had they passed, how much of that is attributable to the fact that the copyright companies overextended themselves, the big media conglomerates, and pissed off Google and some of these other large corporations in Silicon Valley? And so this is like King Kong versus Godzilla, and really it just meant another corporate community got their dander up and went to war with them, and that's why the victory took place.
Well, so look, I think, when big companies are fighting with each other, that's a great time to get good public policy made. It's helpful cover. But I think you'd be making a mistake to see this as just a clash of the titans. Google versus Hollywood, that's a big mistake, because the energy and organizing that went on here wasn't done by Google. Google got in front of this wave right at the end, and certainly using that kind of platform to push for something incredibly important, and certainly millions of people found out about this because of Google that wouldn't have found out about it otherwise. But what we cannot do is leave this effort in the hands of a Google or any other Internet company or any company. If we're not building an independent, popular movement against pushing back against these things, we will lose, because we know, and we saw this on net neutrality, a company like Google can be very helpful, but when they're the only ones in the room, when they're left alone with the Verizons or the Hollywoods of the world, they will cut deals that benefit Google. That's what a big company does. So the reason they did the right thing was because of the popular organizing. The way to keep them accountable is with even more popular organizing and make sure that we don't just step aside and say, oh, great, these big companies will fight it out and kind of hope for the best. That would be the absolute worst thing to do, because they have Google's interest at heart. In this case, it aligned. Next time, it might not. And we need to make sure that there's enough people out there to keep a company like Google honest and keep them to their do no evil pledge that they like to talk about so much.
Well, next time is coming quickly with regard to Google. I think now the dust has been cleared. Even this morning, the New York Times had extensive coverage of an issue that's getting a lot more attention. And not just across the political spectrum, which is that, effectively now Google and Facebook have monopolies for all intents and purposes by economic terms online, and they're unchallengeable. And their whole economic system is based on collecting information that they can sell to advertisers and marketers. And so this whole question of privacy, individual privacy, has been taken an entirely different level. And in these debates, Google is on the other side of the fence from the public interest, as is Facebook. Is this an issue that you see emerging as something Free Press is going to be getting involved in?
I mean, it's certainly something we're interested in, broadly speaking. Like, I will not pretend to be a privacy policy expert. I'm certainly not. But I think, like everybody on the Internet, I'm very, very concerned about these issues. And I think this is how a lot of people are going to be brought into activism around the Internet and around policy, is through these fundamental privacy questions about what kind of information are we giving up to participate online, and what are they doing with what they know about us. And I think those are huge, huge areas for concern. You know, something that keeps me somewhat optimistic is if we can deal with some of the underlying structures, issues like net neutrality, we can preserve some of the ability to actually compete with a company like Google or a Facebook, you know, that weren't even in existence a decade ago. And that's because of the free and open Internet. That's what allowed these big companies to get on the scene. And I still think they are young enough that organizing against and within these environments, on Facebook, for example, can have a tremendous impact, and that shame is still an effective tactic when it comes to a Google or Facebook in a way that it isn't necessarily with a cable company or a phone company, who at this point are sort of beyond shame. Now, that all that said, there's no question these privacy concerns have to be at the top of anybody's list in terms of how much power and how much information are we giving to a Google or Facebook. And I think that's absolutely going to be the center of a lot of the discussion going forward in media policy and just policy in general in the years ahead, no question about it. I don't have the perfect answer formulated yet, and what we should do and where to draw the line and the trade-off for all the things that Facebook or Google offer you, which many of which are great, and this information. But I know we're going to have to be vigilant and diligent, because by their nature, these companies are not looking out for privacy. I think that's especially true at Facebook. The culture of the company, what they're doing, they don't even think twice about it, and that's very, very scary.
Our guest today on Media Matters, Craig Aaron, the executive director, the head of Free Press, the media reform organization. You can learn all you want about Free Press at freepress.net. Craig Aaron will be in town this Wednesday in Champaign-Urbana talking about the future of the media and giving a couple talks, one at 4 p.m. at Gregory Hall, room 213, the other that night on Wednesday, 6 p.m. at the Indy Media Center in downtown Urbana. I urge you to go attend those talks, one or both of them, if you possibly can. Our phone lines, again, open here at WILL, the number 333-9455, or toll-free 1-800-222-9455. And before I get back to a caller who's been waiting patiently, I do have one question I want to make sure I get to you, Craig, before the show expires today, which is, you know, we've been talking about the criminalization of dissent, the decline of press freedom in the United States. And I think most historians and sociologists, you know, when you see a decline in freedom of society, it's usually a sign that the democratic system is not functioning especially well, and power is being consolidated informally, if not formally, behind the scenes. And so much of our attention today is going to the governing system, how corrupt it is, and the election system, and how much money is involved in it, and how this sort of weighs down so that private interests can dominate who gets elected and what they do once they're elected. Is this an issue for Free Press?
Absolutely. I think this is it might be the issue first and foremost. And that's because increasingly I think our media, especially our broadcast media cable companies, are playing a role in which they are complicit in the demise of our democracy. They are the ones profiting from this incredible infusion of cash that we've seen in the wake of the Citizens United decision, this incredible wave of negative ads that are swamping anybody. If you are unlucky enough to be in an early primary or a swing state, you're seeing it any time you turn on the television. The media is playing a role very much in fostering this environment at the very same time that so many of these big companies are cutting back on their coverage of local politics, are cutting back on the issues, a coverage of the issues that matter to local communities, getting rid of seasoned journalists, replacing them with the same cookie-cutter content wherever you go. I think that is a huge concern, and it's very much a democracy concern. So I'm very concerned. I think there are larger issues that go beyond the scope of Free Press in terms of constitutional amendments and what the policy should be around campaign finance reform. I'm very interested in that discussion. It's not one necessarily we're at the center of, but what I can offer are some things that, while we sort that out, while we figure out how to push back against this really poisoning of our democratic discourse, things we can do that start with simple transparency. Right now, your local television station keeps a file of who's buying ads, political ads, but they don't put that online. They don't make it accessible. You have to go down to the station and dig through a filing cabinet. You know, what are they hiding? Why isn't that online for everybody? I think that's something we need to deal with. In fact, I think while we're at it, we should be putting in the ads themselves disclosure of who the big funders are, so that when Puppies and Kittens Against Barack Obama buys an ad on your station, you know, when the scroll runs at the end, you can see that, you know, Karl Rove was behind that ad or whoever it might be. These are things we can do now, things in the power of the FCC to help counteract this tide, counteract this, money, media, and election complex. And I think it's got to be a top priority because these issues are so closely intertwined, the health of our media and the health of our democracy.
Our guest today, Craig Aaron. Let's go back to the phone lines to a couple callers who have been waiting patiently. Let's start with line one, Champagne. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for asking the question. That's the one I was going to ask. But actually, in addition to that, is that I understand with the super funds, when they're set up as a nonprofit, they don't have to disclose anything. But the next point I'd like to make is that I want to commend, you for the work, you know, in terms of Free Press. You know, the work you're doing makes me sleep a little better at night, but then you think of all the other social issues. So at least you're taking care of that. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Caller. And Craig, let me add on to that question or sort of change it a little bit. And maybe our listeners, you know, Free Press has 40 people. It has 500,000 active members. You know, when you go to battle on an issue like network neutrality or on media consolidation, and you look across to the other side of the table, who you're fighting with, the other side, you know, who what the opponent's lobbying resources are, what are you looking at when you look at AT&T or Comcast or National Association of Broadcasters compared to what you bring to the table?
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, so we're outspent based on what companies report, something like 500-1 in Washington, and that's probably overestimating what we're able to spend because that's just based on what they actually report. Spending, which doesn't include all sorts of PR firms and grassroots operations. I mean, look, the biggest phone and cable companies and their trade associations hire 500 lobbyists a year in Washington. That's one basically for every member of Congress, and we have, you know, three. So we're outgunned, but of course, you know, as Saul Alinsky always said, organized people can beat organized money, and, you know, that's what we're trying to do. So certainly the odds can be long, but I think we've also found when you find the right issue, when you can mobilize the public at these critical junctures where decisions are being made, you can have a real major impact. You know, folks who want to support that work, certainly no donation is too large or too small, and you can give it freepress.net. But, you know, the fact is absolutely of course, the odds are stacked against the public interest, which for some people is reason to say, "Oh, gosh, it's hopeless. You know, I'm not going to get involved. I'm not going to, sign this petition or show up or meet with my member of Congress." But, you know, honestly, in the years doing this work, I really take the opposite tack, and I've found that a small group of motivated people can really have a huge impact when they've got the public on their side, when they're there representing the public interest, and can take on these big, powerful institutions and actually win. And so I think we can do a lot more of that. It certainly takes resources, but it also just takes a lot of energy and enthusiasm.
Let's go to our next caller, line four, Geneva. You're on the air with Craig Aaron.
Good afternoon. I like your topic there. It's an excellent deal. I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn and Branch Out and YouTube, and it's strictly, actually, I started out as using it for like what everybody else does for social media, but I'm trying to network with my business on there, and I find it extremely difficult. They make it kind of hard unless you go through certain channels to do it, and you have to spend tons of money, which I think is kind of unfair to the little guy. I happen to be a small business, and I get away with the minimum, it doesn't go out very far, but the thing that really kind of, and it's like the gentleman said earlier, they don't really watch the security. I don't know how many times I've gotten viruses from it. In fact, I'm about ready to pull off of it and go to something else because it's just I've had to work with, you know, my computer's been, and even though I've got great antivirus stuff, somehow, some way, somebody seems to manage. And now we got people from South America and Africa getting in there trying to get you to, get you to put their email address and Yahoo address on there. What you got? I say no. You got to look out, especially when there's no pictures from them. I don't know what. To me, it seems like the security has been well lacking in Facebook. Some of the other ones are not so bad, but I'm trying to set up a couple of shows on there, and I'm trying to sell some of my stuff that I make. And I was wondering how you feel about it.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Craig Aaron, any thoughts?
Sure. I mean, real quick. I mean, obviously, you got to be careful out there. Don't give the money to the Nigerian prince who sent you an email and all of that. But I think, you know, fundamentally.
Oh, Craig, why didn't you tell me that before? Darn it.
I know. You know, the things you learn when you're trying to fundraise. but no, look. I think fundamentally, that's a reason to get engaged in these policy battles and these policy questions. You know, they're not the sexiest things out there on the internet, but they're so important because it is having a watchdog on the beat that's going to make sure that these guys have to be paying attention to privacy. It's having net neutrality that allows anybody with an internet connection to go head-to-head with the biggest media companies, to have the potential to reach that huge audience. You know, it wasn't long ago that Google was a couple guys in a garage and eBay was some hobbyist. That's the beauty of the open internet, but that's what we have to fight to protect. And we have to be vigilant because, you know, every time there's an advance, you know, somebody's out there trying to take advantage of it, or maybe they're trying to sell your personal information, whether they're, you know, some Russian hackers or whether they're Facebook. We very much have to be concerned, and I think the only way we're going to be able to address those things and continue to build the internet into what it really could be is if we pay attention to these policy questions.
Now, Craig Aaron, just like that caller and a couple of the other callers for that matter, people who are calling in who are really interested in these issues, they understand their importance, they want to get involved. What do you tell someone who says, hey, I want to get involved, what can I, a single individual, do to actually help participate in these debates?
Well, so the first thing you can do, of course, is sign up at freepress.net.
Do you have to sign over a lot of money to do that?
You do not. It's absolutely free, and we will send you occasional emails when there's something important that's happening nationally or in your community. And I think the other things that you can do is start to get informed. We put out a daily email with all the news of that's happening in the media and technology world. And, you know, talk to your friends and neighbors about this, and then talk to your elected officials. Make sure they understand your concern about issues like privacy, about piracy, about, you know, who controls the media you're getting. The way we get bad policies is when the big companies are the only ones in the room. And your voice really does matter in these debates, and small things like sending a letter, signing a petition, going to a meeting can have a huge impact. The last thing I'll say is you absolutely have to support your independent media outlets, your public media outlets, including this station, lots of the things, the outlets we talked about throughout the course of this interview. If you like what they're doing, if you want an alternative, then you should support those outlets, obviously with your eyeballs and your ears, as well as your dollars. Crucially important if we're going to continue to have a broad range of debate and discourse. So that would be my pitch to anybody who wants to do this. There's lots of work to be done, but this is a great time to get engaged and involved on these issues.
Craig, we've only got a few seconds left. What would you say the biggest victory in the last year has been for the media reform movement?
Yeah, we didn't even talk about it. Stopping the AT&T merger, unquestionably, this would have been a disastrous deal for consumers, would have really concentrated power over the internet in too few hands. It was because of the smart combination of outside public pressure and, you know, groundbreaking inside research. That's what built the case against AT&T and pushed the Justice Department and the FCC to stop it. That is a tremendous victory for the public interest.
Our guest today, you've just been listening to, Craig Aaron. Craig, I hear the band warming up in the background. That means they want to get me out of the studio. Thank you so much for joining us today, and you will be speaking this Wednesday at 213 Gregg Hall on the campus of the University of Illinois at 4 p.m. and then at 6 p.m. at the Indy Media Center. Craig, have a great visit.
All right. Thanks, Bob, and thanks for having me on.
Of course. I'm Bob McChesney. I want to thank Christina Williams, my producer, Kyle Croha, the engineer. I had a great week, and we'll be back in 167 hours. Enjoy the Super Bowl, and see you in a week.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance. Private instruction for social or competitive dancing, weddings, or other special events. Lessons for singles or couples, beginners or advanced of all ages. Information at 378-4601 or on your web, search at Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance.
Here is the weather forecast for Central Illinois. Sunny today, highs and lows in the upper 20s. Tuesday mostly cloudy, highs in the lower 40s. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3 Urbana.